Hello, bonjour, and welcome to this week's edition of the headlines from CKUT's Community News Collective in Montreal. Information that matters from our neighborhood to the world. The headlines are produced in collaboration with the Dominion. We're broadcasting from Montreal and rebroadcasting on stations throughout Canada and the United States. And this just in, you can now subscribe to our podcast at ckutnews.wordpress.com. These are the headlines for the week of May 10th, 2009. I'm Jennifer Belshaw. We'll start with local headlines.
From Papua New Guinea to Honduras, people around the world say that mining companies based in Canada, such as Barrick Gold and Osisko, are destroying the social and environmental fabric of their communities. Representatives from disparate corners of the globe gathered on Monday at Mont Royal Park in downtown Montreal for a unique protest.
The big spike, where's our spike?
Where's our spike?
They met at this landmark, a favorite spot for joggers and cyclists, in order to stake a claim and develop an open pit mine for a fictional company called Royal Ore. Here's actor and activist Jason McLean.
Royal Ore. We are the Royal Ore Mining Company. We're not your daddy's mining company. Like we're doing in Honduras, Mexico, Congo, all around the world, we're going to do right here in Montreal. We're going to take the gold right out of the mountain. Une mine ciel ouvert à Montréal. An open pit mine in Montreal.
The aim of the action, according to a press release, was to give Montrealers, quote, an immediate sense of what it's like to wake up one morning with a mining company busily at work destroying one's land and community.
These are people from all around the world affected by mines from Canadian mining companies.
Jethro Tullin is a representative of the Akali Tanji Association, a human rights organization based in the Portega province of Papua New Guinea, where the Barrick Gold Corporation operates. He said in a press release that the Portega mine has, quote, destroyed our land, our water, our safety, and our ability to feed ourselves. And he added that the government of Papua New Guinea is violently evicting indigenous landowners on behalf of the Barrick Gold Corporation.
What Barrick is doing now is engaging the Papua New Guinea government to introduce a state of emergency, what I'm talking here, to burning down houses and instead of fairly placing those people in a fair and equitable manner, in a sustainable manner, what Barrick is going about or doing is going about displacing them by burning down their houses and destroying their food gardens and villages, which is unfair at this moment. Those are including security guards and regular police from the Papua New Guinea Royal Constabulary and the military operation that is being conducted now.
Jean Moisy Dijoli from the Congolese Lawyers in Canada group said that the Anvil Mining Corporation, which is based in Canada and Australia, has been complicit in the killing of civilians in the Democratic Republic of Congo, or DRC.
But the issue here we're talking about here, it's what we have about the civil war that you heard in Congo.
Sure, the Eastern Congo.
Raping women. Yeah. And this actually, behind this, what we call civil war, it's actually the war for mineral. Okay? It's a war for those big companies.
For minerals.
Yeah. Yes.
What companies are you talking about?
I can tell about Anvil Mining. They actually help the government, I mean the army, to kill a civilian, and they were actually involved in that.
They how did they do that?
They gave them the guns. They helped them to go and push out the civilians so they can actually exploit the minerals.
Activists are calling for increased accountability of mining corporations through the passage of Bill C-300. Cleve Higgins, one of the organizers of Monday's protest, told CKUT about the background of this private member's bill, which is based on recommendations from a roundtable process that has so far been ignored by Stephen Harper's conservative minority government.
The roundtable recommendations, the roundtable was a process that the Liberal government initiated a few years ago that brought together industry, government, and civil society on the issue of Canadian mining abroad, and they came out with some pretty limited but still a step in the right direction recommendations on, like, having an ombudsperson that mining problems could be brought to from other countries, and, like, a process for eventually, if a mining company was found to be doing things really bad, then the Canadian government could withdraw some support that it provides.
Demands of activists also include the reform of mining laws in Canada and abroad, to ensure adequate consultation of indigenous groups affected by mines and better regulation of mining operations. They are also demanding protection of freedom of expression from lawsuits launched by mining companies meant to silence dissent. You can find pictures and more audio from Monday's protests on ckutnews.wordpress.com.
And now for national headlines.
There's nothing to stop the federal government from bringing home a Canadian man stranded in Sudan home tomorrow if they wanted to, his lawyers argued in federal court on Thursday. Quote, "We are dealing with an individual who is completely dependent on the federal government for his repatriation," unquote. Lawyer Yavar Hamid said Thursday of his client, Aboussoufiane Abdelrazak, who has been sleeping on a cot inside the Canadian embassy in Khartoum for more than a year. Lawyers and observers gathered Thursday to hear the opening submissions in a federal court application, arguing the Canadian government has violated the Charter of Rights and Freedoms by denying Abdelrazak the emergency passport he needs to come home. Quote, "We find procrastination, evasiveness, obfuscation, and general bad faith," unquote, said Hamid, when describing how the government had acted during the 6 years Abdelrazak had been away from his children in Canada. When he returned to the Sudan to visit his ill mother in 2003, Abdelrazak alleges Sudanese authorities arrested and tortured him, based on CSIS and RCMP misinformation. The Sudanese government has released him twice, and both the RCMP and CSIS have said they have no current and substantive information linking him to criminal activity. Ottawa originally said it would give him an emergency passport if he obtained a flight itinerary, which he did. Supporters then raised the money for his travel. A few hours before he was supposed to board the plane last month, the government, however, changed its mind and said no to issuing the emergency passport.
Liberal MP Ruby Dalla and her two former domestic workers, both of Filipino descent, testified in Ottawa Tuesday before a House of Commons Citizenship and Immigration Committee. Dalla has come under fire recently after her two domestic workers, Magdalene Gordo and Richland Tongson, came forward with information about how they had been forced to work in slave-like conditions for Dalla. The two women told the parliamentary committee that they had worked long hours with unpaid overtime and were forced to clean the Dalla family's chiropractic offices and do manual labor well outside the realm of live-in domestic caregiving. The two women told the parliamentary committee that they had lived with the ongoing fear of deportation, as Dalla had kept their passports, birth certificates, and marriage certificates. This incident has shed light on the widespread human rights and labor law violations faced by those who come to Canada under the Live-In Caregiver program. In Canada, 96% of live-in caregivers are Filipino women. Today I spoke with Joanna Vasquez, chairperson of the Philippine Women's Center of Quebec, located here in Montreal, who explained that organization's view of the Live-In Caregiver program.
The issue of human rights has been brought forward with this case, and the type of slave-like conditions that these women have been working under. So we've been calling for the scrapping of this program. We actually have a slogan, end it, don't mend it, because Minister Kenney is saying that this program can be reformed, and we don't believe it can be reformed. You know, we also are saying to Canadians, we're supposed to be a defender of human rights. That's what Canada's international reputation is for. And if we really are a great defender of human rights, how can we have this type of federal program in our country?
Okay. And coming from the slogan, why can't this program be mended?
Because it really there's the three pillars of the program. It's the living component, which forces the women to live in slave-like conditions in their home. They're isolated. The second pillar is that they're forced to only work for one employer through an employment authorization. So it really ties them. They're tied, they're almost chained to this employer through that employment authorization. And then four is a 24 months within a three-year time period before they're eligible for their permanent residency. So it's like dangling a carrot, and it leaves these women vulnerable, right? They're trying to just get that permanent residency. So we want all of those pillars gone.
And now for international headlines.
American airstrikes, which killed perhaps more than 100 civilians in western Afghanistan last Monday, threatened to stiffen Afghan opposition to the war, just as the Obama administration is threatening to send 20,000 more troops to the country. In a phone call played on a loudspeaker on Wednesday to outraged members of the Afghan parliament, the governor of Farah province, Rohul Amin, said that as many as 130 civilians had been killed. Afghan lawmakers immediately called for an agreement regulating foreign military operations in the country. UN officials and the Karzai government have been pleading with NATO forces to reduce the number of Afghan civilians killed. According to the Afghan officials, over 60 civilians had been killed by international troops in the past month alone. Human Rights Watch recently reported that 300 Afghan civilians were mistakenly killed by NATO last year. Thousands are believed to have been killed since 2001. Jessica Berry, a spokeswoman for the International Committee of the Red Cross, said the organization had sent a team to the scene on Tuesday and it saw houses destroyed and dozens of bodies. She and Afghan officials worry that with the increase of American troops this year, the conflict is likely to intensify. Quote, with more troops coming in, there is a risk that civilians will be more and more vulnerable, unquote. One Western diplomat said that the United States Special Operations Forces should stop missions until after presidential elections are held in August. The forces have often been blamed for nighttime raids on villages, detentions, and airstrikes that have brought the population in southern Afghanistan to the point of revolt. More than 90 civilians, the majority of them women and children, were killed in an American airstrike on August 22nd in Azizabad.
Controversial copyright legislation passed through the lower house of France's National Assembly on Tuesday, enabling internet service providers to cut off the internet connection of customers for downloading pirated music and video files. The bill is expected to pass through the Senate, and when enacted into law, will create a governmental agency for the tracking of online pirates, the first of its kind in the world. The law would operate on a three-strikes basis. After three warnings, internet service would be cut off, even though the offending party would still have to pay connection fees. Critics of the bill worry that accused pirates won't be given the opportunity to challenge the charges against them in court, while others have expressed concerns about the privacy of France's citizens. The bill is expected to be challenged in the European Parliament, where legislation was recently passed that forbids governments from cutting off a user's internet access without first having the approval of a court of law. Many countries are considering copyright reform lately as music and film industries lobby heavily in the wake of declining profits. In Canada, the Conservative Party introduced Bill C-61 last year, a copyright bill which drew much controversy due to its restrictiveness when compared to similar bills in other countries. The bill died when an election was called in the fall. However, the Conservatives plan to write new legislation to replace C-61.
And those are this week's headlines. Our broadcasts are available online at mediacoop.ca and ckutnews.wordpress.com, where you can now subscribe to our podcast. And you can read more news from the grassroots at dominionpaper.ca. Thanks as always to the Dominion and our contributors this week, Juniper Belshaw, Brody McRae, TJ Khan, and the CKUT Community News Collective. I'm David Koch. If you see or hear anything newsworthy, let us know. To contact us, email headlines@ckut.ca or call 514-448-4041, extension 6788. And thanks for listening.